Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on WGN. And in the studio, we have our friends. I've known you guys for a long time. Helen and Mike Cameron, owners and founders, right, of the Uncommon Ground Cafe, the two, the one on Clark Street and the one up on Devon. And we played up on the roof because it's the 10th anniversary of the first certified organic rooftop farm. Okay. So, first of all, let's talk about the farm on Devon, and then I want to get a little bit of the history of Uncommon Ground, and then a little bit later we're going to bring in Brad Peterson to play some music, who's going to be at Uncommon Ground on August 24th, I believe.
August 18th.
August 18th.
Listening party.
Oh, August 18th is what I have here. I wasn't looking. Okay, so talk a little bit about, since it's the 10th anniversary of the rooftop farm. Talk about how that all came about and how you were pioneers in that field.
Well, I grew up in Chicago on the west side, and we always had a tremendous amount of vegetables, and we had fruit trees and things just on a normal, you know, city lot size. And it was such a great way to grow up and, you know, informed my choices becoming a chef and getting into the food world. And so when we were looking for that next restaurant, we were up there and looking at this building, and we climbed up to the roof to check the condition of the roof. And it's about 4,000 square feet, so it's rather large. And when my head sort of cleared the parapet wall and I saw that huge space, it was February, but it was full sunlight. I was like, oh my God, Mike, we could grow food up here. And he's holding the ladder looking up at me, and I remember him just pleasantly nodding his head like, oh, that's a great idea. So he climbed up, and we pretty much in that moment decided that, you know, we would, you know, if we were able to purchase the building, that we would absolutely put a working farm on the roof of that building.
Couple questions. What was the building? What was its previous life?
Well, it had been a restaurant prior.
Okay.
And for a long time, it was the Glenway Inn. About 50 years. So it was really, you know, deeply rooted establishment in that community. So, and we kind of saved the building from a wrecking ball and development. So there was a lot of appreciation from the community on that.
And your first Uncommon Ground was on Clark Street.
Yep.
What's the address?
Grace and Clark.
Grace and Clark.
Yeah.
And you said 27 years.
27 years.
You're on 27 years.
Yep.
So what made you start looking at Devon?
I think we came to a place, it was about 16 years into the original, when we thought, you know, I think we're ready to do another project. And so when we found this building, it was sort of an ideal situation for us because we are very much a community-centric restaurant. We have, you know, live music, we use our walls as gallery space. We're very, you know, activated in the green community, the local food community, sustainability. And, you know, we kind of felt like that population in that particular area was very underserved, and we thought that we could really, you know, do something there. But, you know, we weren't certainly looking for, you know, something with rooftop access or even a parking lot. So when we saw this place, and it already had a big kitchen, it had a music room, so we were, like, really enamored by the space. And we had to rebuild it somewhat, and it took some effort, but, you know, because when you put a farm on a roof, you know, there's about 6,000, you know, just 10 pounds of soil.
Yeah,
right. Dry weight, just that. So we really had to make sure that we built a solid structure to house that.
You were first. Were there models you looked at? I mean, had anybody else done this? I mean, how did you learn about what you're about ready to get into?
Yeah, well, you know, we just sort of had this desire to make this happen, and I knew we should be able to easily grow those vegetables here, right? So when we started looking into, you know, maybe things that we could be using as an example, we really found nothing.
Yeah.
So we kind of had to make it up as we went along. And we got some help from the organic gardener, Jeannie Pinsoff Nolan, who at the time was doing the farm in the zoo at Lincoln Park Zoo. And I was introduced to her. And, you know, we looked for other examples and didn't find it. So we basically... It's a full-on farm with real soil. It's not anything modified. 12 inches, so we're kind of following the square foot gardener principles. And, you know, and that's how we set it up. And actually, it's been working quite nicely, but we had challenges trying to figure out how to make it work quite nicely.
You know, I was there, of course, at the beginning. I did a piece for the Sun-Times. What about, I mean, not to get real geeky about it, but what about building codes? I mean, what was it like to work with the city on something they'd never been involved
in? You know,
these people are building a farm. And
you know, it's crazy because at the time, we were trying to find some assistance from the city, and we had met the mayor, and we had seen the green roof at City Hall, and we thought, oh, you know, there's got to be a program somehow, some way, now that we've decided to expand at this level. And I literally went knocking on doors at City Hall. It was the craziest thing. I just kept asking people and not taking no for an answer until I found the right department. And when I did, and explained what it was that we were trying to do, he said, you know, that's a great story. Can you sit down for just a minute? And he went and got the rest of his staff, and he brought him into the conference room, and he said, okay, you guys, I'm paying you all to go out and find these people. This guy just literally knocked on my door. This is the project we're looking for.
So isn't that? Really, I didn't know this. Wow.
Yeah, it was really, really crazy. And the city had never done anything like this before, so it's way overbuilt, as you can imagine.
Yes.
I oversaw the whole project, and you know, to do the rooftop farm, we actually had to dig the basement down 5 feet and underpin the entire building and put in all new steel post and beams to support the structure at the basement level, as that translates up to the rooftop level to sort of support all of that extra weight. And that's really how we went about it. It was it was about a 6-month project. I oversaw literally every day.
Is it year round?
No.
Okay. How seasonal is it?
We have 3 seasons.
3 seasons.
We really
okay.
try to start as early as we can, but of course we can't do anything until things have fully thawed.
Right.
This year's been really wacko. It's the weirdest year we've had. And we keep great records, but we're about 4 weeks behind what we normally expect to be harvesting. Just April was very cold, and then May was very bouncy, a lot of temperature variance, a lot of rain. And so we couldn't fully get, you know, the bulk of our spring produce before we had to put our summer produce in. It just didn't happen as quickly. You know, the weather just wasn't helping us.
And what all do you have up there? I mean, collard greens, peas. Talk about
there's about 60 varieties of plants: tomatoes, peppers, eggplants, beans, many varieties thereof, cucumbers, spinach, kale, parsley, chives, all kinds of flowers.
You had honey at one time.
Yeah, we have 2 beehives.
Okay.
And we really try to make sure that we always talk about the importance of saving our bees and stopping all this horrible pesticide use that's killing them, because they really are in danger. And, you know, the past 3 years we've seen that firsthand, because we haven't had successful hives. Finally this year we're doing well with 2 of them, so I'm feeling a lot better about it. And we also try to we're a way station for monarch butterflies.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And we've been saving hundreds of butterflies, and right now we have maybe 35 monarchs in chrysalis. And when I was there this morning, two new ones hatched. Yesterday we had a big open house, and there were a bunch of children there, so we brought the chrysalises and the butterflies upstairs, and the children were able to release the butterflies.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, it was just really beautiful. Just a really beautiful thing. And so we really, it's like a little haven, you know, a little microcosm of the world with all this biodiversity. And so when we have a bad insect, generally the insect that likes to feast on that bad insect shows up. And we haven't had to use any kind of treatments on our plants in years now.
You walked right into my next question about interaction with the community and what you do with kids and people in the neighborhood. And one thing that's trended since I was there 10 years ago we just did a thing on I just want to talk about the relationship between restaurants and cafes and stuff with social causes. We did a thing on Sip of Hope over there in Logan Square, where the proceeds from the coffee shop go to suicide prevention and mental health care and stuff. And I just saw, again, I saw an article this week about some of the restaurants in Kentucky. They're doing stuff with opiate people and stuff like that. Is there a responsibility? How tied in, how important is it to be tied in with social causes in your restaurant?
Well, Uncommon Ground is unusual in that we don't have an advertising budget. And instead, we use, you know, our resources in a way to sort of further those good causes. So there's a lot of community related, you know, groups that come and we'll do fundraisers for them. But there's also a lot of sustainability related or the good food world related types of things that, you know, I'm, you know, the whole reason I did this farm is because I wanted to be able to grow my own food, thereby knowing exactly that there are no chemicals being used, you know, that we're doing this as naturally as we can, making the food that we're consuming really good for us and not having those things. And then same with the beer that we produce at Clark Street at Green Star Brewing. I mean, that's really important to me. And if I am eating meat, I want to make sure that those animals were humanely treated, because I feel like a happy animal then would give me good, happy energy versus a miserable animal who had a horrible life, you know. So I'm very, very keen on sourcing, you know, the types of ingredients that I would be happy to eat. So if I'm not happy to eat it, I'm not putting it on my menu. So that's kind of where all this is coming from. And so we're very active in that world, in that community.
And you use the stuff from the farm at both restaurants?
Yes.
How does that play out?
The Clark Street restaurant also has a certified organic sidewalk farm. It's only about 70 square feet, but it's pretty productive. And also, it's really just a way of connecting the community. All those people that are walking by from the Cubs games, you see all this beautiful food growing, and you're like in this hedge of tomatoes and beans and cucumbers, and it's beautiful. I mean, it's, you know, people really appreciate it, and they're good with it. You know, the people aren't trying to destroy it when they walk by. Sometimes they'll pluck a tomato, yeah. But, you know, it's really, people are very respectful of it.
Yeah. Okay, we got to take a break for some spots. Then I want to talk a little about the history and then your role with music. And we'll get into the music side of Uncommon Ground. So don't go away on Nocturnal Journal on WGN. Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on WGN. And we're talking about the whole history here of Uncommon Ground and the relationship with music. You've even been nice to my brother. I know he's played at your place on Clark Street. I came and saw him. In the studio, we have Brad Peterson, who you've got a gig coming up on August 18th at Uncommon Ground.
I suppose it's a gig.
Yeah.
I'm not really playing at it, though. We're actually just listening to the debut of a new record that's going to be released on August 24th.
Unknown.
It's called The Unknown Album, and the thing is, I recently built a garden shed studio and have been doing all the recording myself, not enlisting the assistance of my band. Yeah. So my band hasn't even heard these songs yet. So, and I decided it was going to be way too difficult for me to translate this into a solo performance. So I thought, okay, I'm just going to make it more like a book signing meets a listening party. And because of Uncommon Ground, I thought there was a common element with the Unknown album being, you know, uncommon, unknown. And we've done this before, Mike and I have. We did about 10 years ago, maybe, we did, I had a record called the Red Album. And I've watched the Uncommon Ground Cafe expand over the years, going back 15 years is when Michael and I met.
Yeah, that was a good time.
How'd you guys meet?
Well, I think it was at the Jeff Buckley show.
Yeah.
It was Jeff Buckley.
Right. Yeah, Jeff Buckley.
And that was a pretty famous night. It's a story in of itself.
Hold back. What happened? Something you could talk about?
Well, sure. Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's kind of, you know, you could probably record it and you know, it's a whole series on how that magical night. I don't know if you're familiar with Jeff Buckley, but at Jeff Buckley, you know, I had met him a few months prior to that show, had never heard of him, ended up at the last show of my first national tour, played a place called CBGB's Gallery, which was next door to the famous CBGB's, but it was more tailored for acoustic singer-songwriters and, you know, less about the punk and the rock and roll. And it was my last night. I had the flu, and I had, they asked if I would play with this fellow named Jeff Buckley. And I walked in. I heard his sound check. My jaw dropped. I dropped my guitar. It was the most amazing. At that point, I hadn't heard anything that beautiful in maybe ever.
Mm-hmm.
But it just, we ended up becoming friends. We ended up doing songs together that night. And I followed his career, and I found out he was going to be playing at Uncommon Ground. I showed up at that Uncommon Ground. I think there was, I don't know, 30 people.
Yeah, that was about all we could hold, actually.
It was very
mostly
small.
Friends and family and a couple of music industry folks there that kind of knew what was going to be going on. And yeah, it was definitely a pretty magical night.
And how long ago was that? I mean, he's passed.
I think 93 or 94.
94. Yeah. What made you get into music in the first place at Uncommon Ground?
You know, my brother and I were both musicians and come from a pretty musical background with our grandfather. Was a in the Seattle Symphony Orchestra as a lead percussionist, kind of taught us all some really fun stuff. And so we always wanted to have music be a really vibrant part of anything that we did. When we opened the restaurant, and prior to Uncommon Ground, I was a food and beverage director of a little French hotel downtown here, and I had created a jazz club, and I had so much fun putting together a program that had never existed before, and then all the like crazy famous people that I didn't even know who they were, they would blow through town and come and sit in. Uh-huh. I was like, okay, when we open Uncommon Ground from day one, we need to support a local emerging artists more in the style of the music that I like to perform, but also that we enjoyed listening to. And we really wanted it to be sort of that strong singer-songwriter type vibe and give people a nice, safe launching pad, small space, you know, that they could perform their music, original music.
And you can tell, Brad, I mean, when you go in there, you can tell the place is designed and it's done by people who know about the industry, who are musicians. I mean, you know, it's very respectful toward the space of a musician. What's it like to play there? Yeah.
The environment is, it's a nurturing environment it's originally, it was coffee and dessert. And I just remember just the sound of the steaming of milk, and I just felt so comfortable. And speaking of Jeff, I had seen him and hung out with him at Chenet a couple of times, and I was just very much wanting something like that in Chicago. And I was so grateful to find, I discovered it kind of because of Jeff Buckley. And again, that's sort of the roots of how we became friends. And, you know, I watched from that first room, and then it expanded to that second room, and then the bar, and then a fourth room, and then the brewery, and then the second location is just.
Hey, and you've stayed loyal to Wrigleyville, Tom Ricketts hasn't come knocking on your door yet.
You know, it's funny. We rented the space for 20 years, and about that time, we finally were able to purchase the building. And I swear, in 3 months after we purchased the building, Tom bought the Cubs. And his guys and him, and I'd known Tom for a while because he used to rent our place out for his company, for his whole staff, and have parties there. I'd done shots of whatever at the end of the bar with him. You know,
oh, I'd like to do that really myself.
Knowing who he was or whatever. Yeah. And I remember, I mean, literally 3 months after we had finally bought the building, after trying to do that for 20 years, he said, hey, you know, we'd love to buy this building. But you can stay here as long as you want. And I said, you know, I tell you what, you win the World Series, you can come back and talk to me again. And when they won the World Series, I was like, uh-oh, are they going to literally come knocking on the door? Like, oh, you know, okay, please don't come knocking.
did he come back?
No. I mean, we still see all those guys all the time. I think they got enough going on their plates right now with all that development that's happening, which has just been fantastic for the neighborhood.
It has been. You okay with that?
Oh, yeah. It's been great. You know, okay. The more the merrier. You know, it's been really great.
Okay, we're going to take a break for David Jennings and the news. We're going to come back with a song. And, man, don't let me forget, I got to talk about your Garden Shed studio. We got off track. Trying to keep the flow going, but I want to talk about that and how that ties in with you guys, dude. So don't go away. There's great stuff on Nocturnal Journal on WGN.
All right. Singing one now. I happen to know it's Michael's birthday tomorrow, and I don't know how many songs I'm going to be doing, so I'm going to do this right now. It's called Happy Birthday. around the sun. And every 4 years or so, we have to add one. It was this time of year, not so long ago, that you were brought to the world to meet everyone. Happy birthday, happy birthday, happy birthday, happy birthday. There aren't any cards or candles, only hopes for the best and birthday wishes. Happy birthday, happy birthday, happy birthday, happy birthday. Time, be glad for what you got. Be happy for your life, and it's not done. So thanks to your dad and thanks to your mom. Better thank God. We never really know, 'cause we only live so long. So let's celebrate today, because tomorrow you could be gone. Happy birthday, happy birthday, happy birthday, happy birthday.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you so much, Brad Peterson. Oh, Michael.
Yeah.
Happy birthday.
Thanks, man. That was a surprise.
Yeah,
thanks,
had you
Brad.
Heard that before?
Yes, I have. I love that song.
Yeah.
Thanks, Brad. That was a nice surprise.
Okay, so I have some questions. I'm going to go off the questions. Talk about that song, Brad. I know a little bit about your background, about how that song come together.
That song was the antithesis to the... I think it was there was some kind of article about how royalties have to be paid every time Happy Birthday is actually. And I was like, I want to create a free one, like a general public use license version of a Happy Birthday song. Because I was wondering, why do movies have "For He's a Jolly Good Fellow" all the time? And now I think that's something has changed with the copyright or the publishing. I think it is public domain now. Maybe you know better than I.
No, I don't.
But that was the idea. And also, since I'm going to create my free Happy Birthday song, I also wanted it to be sort of an antithesis. And, you know, it's kind of morbid if you think about it. You might die tomorrow, so let's celebrate today, kind of.
I never really listened to those lyrics that much before. Thanks, Brad.
You never know. In fact, it says you never really know.
Yeah, right.
Well,
exactly.
Now,
that's true.
Yeah. Well, talk about your journey. I've read a little about you. I've never met you, but you had a spinal injury. What happened? And how, I was going to ask you about how that affected your career. I read that there was loss of your right arm a little bit, but then I heard that song and made me want me to bring that up again. So talk about the challenges. And
well, I was kind of forced into retirement. I even had a last show. I didn't think I was going to ever get my... I had lost nearly completely my right arm and part of my left arm.
Well, what happened?
It was Evel Knievel lifestyle, as I was telling the Camerons earlier.
Yeah.
It was a perfect storm of... they don't really know, but what happened is my spinal cord was getting strangled, and I had put off doing anything about it because I'm deathly afraid of doctors, hospitals, surgeries. And finally, I met the surgeon. He said, look, man, if you were my brother, I'd force you to do it. And it was something the way he said it. If you were my brother, you're going to lose your arm. And the longer you wait, you might not ever get it
back.
And
how long ago was this?
This was about 5 years.
5 years?
4.5 years ago. Oh, no, maybe 5 years ago, right around now. And, you know, after a few, you know, couple of years of just, I started getting some of my, you know, some of my sensation. Well, I never really lost sensation. I lost strength. It was more motor. But one of my therapies was to build a garden shed studio. You know, I didn't want to have to just do something that wasn't going to amount to something when I was done, like lifting weights. I wanted to have something to show for it. And I've always wanted to have a garden shed studio. And so it took me about a year.
And you built it.
I built it.
And where's it at? I don't know where it's at.
It's right near Ravinia in Highland Park.
It is. Okay.
Yeah, I can hear the shows.
Oh, okay.
And it was probably over the course of 9 months, I got 80% of it done. And it's actually still not completely done. But I enjoy, to the chagrin of my wife, that it's not completely done. I enjoy the kind of rustic, non-finished it. But it's, you know, acoustically pleasing in there. And it's got all the equipment. And these days I start writing songs over my first cup of coffee. I have, you know, guitar and vocals down by lunch, and adding lead guitar and, you know, percussion and backing vocals by the time people are going to bed. And I try to do the quieter stuff after, you know, people have gone to sleep, because it is, you know, a residential area.
Yeah. So building the studio was kind of a therapeutic thing.
Now I get to use it and record records.
And I knew about the studio. Did you talk to them about, we're thinking Uncommon Ground, Unknown, and then the garden, the rooftop farm. And, I mean, did you guys network what it's like to build a garden shed? Did you guys talk to them about that?
Well, he let me know about the project. I thought it was absolutely fantastic. I still got to get over and see it. I've heard from it. I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah. Now, Unknown. Was this done there? I mean, there's a picture in the CD sleeve.
That's it.
Is that the studio?
Yep.
So, give me a little specs. I mean, how big is the studio?
We were talking about working with the city and passing. I had to pass more inspections to build this than I did for some houses that I've worked on.
Uh huh.
It's the specs of, I think it's 9 by 13, and then I have a 12-degree angle on the pitch of the roof. I have it pitched such that in the summer months, the overhang of my greatest window that goes across the front, the sun is over the angle, so the heat, there's no radiation coming in. But in the wintertime, when the sun is lower in the sky, it comes in. And I have a little converter for the heating and cooling. It's silent. It's less than 11 dBs when it's on full blast, but I never even need to do it on full blast. It's whisper quiet, and it's very well insulated. I used recycled denim blue jeans. You can buy bats of recycled blue jeans that's actually more acoustically pleasing than fiberglass, and it has better R value.
Wow. Where were you recording before this?
Wherever,
okay.
You know, some things were recorded in garages in California and Topanga Canyon, some in apartments, and, you know, I haven't really recorded in a, quote, recording studio over a decade.
But that was where I was going with that, is how has the studio now changed the process for you? How has it enhanced the music that you make?
Well, the great thing about it is... There's pros and cons to it, but the great thing, I found myself, when I would have to book time and the logistics involved in getting other artists to play on my records, there was so much time and coordination to get them there, and then them learning your song, and very often wasn't exactly what I wanted. Now, of course, I have limitations in my ability. I played all the instruments at varying levels of ability, but... I find myself channeling artists that I really love. You know, people laugh at me when I say that my favorite drummer is Ringo, but he really, I want to make t-shirts. What would Ringo do? Because I find myself on a daily basis thinking, what would Ringo do here? And it's, you know, much more of a melodic, less of a backbeat, holding down the backbeat, but the drums actually sing. So I think that's, you know, and I do this a lot with people I know, too. John Perricello, a hero guitar player, pedal steel guy. I find myself thinking, what would he do here? And I do it. And, you know, a lot of takes are sometimes involved. And sometimes I have to get a little creative with my technology, splicing together 8 takes to get the perfect track. But eventually I get what I want. And, you know, at the end, I didn't deliberately set out to do everything myself, but that's, I find it quite liberating that I'm able to do it now.
How many instruments do you play? That was...
Like I say, I play all of them at varying levels of ability.
So guitar, banjo?
I have a couple of banjos. I have many guitars. I think the instrument that's hanging on my wall that I have the least ability at is a viola.
Uh-huh.
And probably I wouldn't want anybody to hear me. Maybe if I just did one note at a time and and spliced it all together. That's one of the most difficult instruments to play. Violin and viola, I think, are the hardest.
So now, this is a listening party on 818 at Uncommon Ground. So Handicap, what will go on that night? People will be listening to your new record. And Michael?
Yeah, it's going to be a great party. I know we're going to have some little goodie bags that Brad is being the mad scientist of, some fun projects for some unknown blends of some things that will be given away. Do you want to talk about it?
You talk about the Green Star
show. Yeah. Wow, yeah, we're definitely, you know, we're going to be blending a special organic beer for the night, so that'll be nice. It'll be the unknown blend,
and oh, that's nice.
Commemorating the release of this album coming up, so we're pretty excited about that too.
And how can people give us the website, and how can people find out?
Yeah, uncommonground.com. We have live music 7 nights a week. Go check out the calendar, and you want to find all the details and come give a little listen for Brad of his new album. Come check it out.
I didn't know. You 7 nights a week?
7 nights a week for 27
on
years,
Clark
Dave,
Street?
On Clark Street. I think we're the longest running music venue in the city of Chicago continuously right now.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
7 nights a week.
7 nights a week for 27 years.
Wow.
363 days a year.
How do you book the room? I mean,
I used to. For 17 years, I was a full-time music booking agent, and I actually ran sound. I recorded all of the shows for those 17 years as well, and now I have a full-time, I'm on my, I think, fifth full-time music program director in those 10 years. You know, there's life expectancy of about 2 years, and roll in the next round of people to book the next emerging artist.
Who else has played there?
Oh, we man. Well, have you heard about, Chris Shiflett, the lead guitar player of Foo Fighters? We just did a special show for him.
Well, just right the last before, week while they were in town.
When they were in town before the Wrigley stuff. And
well, how'd that happen?
A good friend of mine, Jason Narducci, is a friend of Dave Grohl's, and he says, hey, man, my friend is a lead guitar player of Foo Fighters, would really like to play on Common Ground. Can we make that happen? I'm like, yeah, sure, whatever you want. So we'll make it happen. You know, that's kind of how those things fall in my lap. It's kind of how that, you know, 94, the Jet Buckley thing fell in my lap. A friend of mine, Nick Miller, says, hey, man, you need to hear this kid. I just got this cassette tape. Remember those things? I guess you got to hear this kid, man. He's looking for an acoustic spot. He just got signed to Columbia. Holy moly. Yeah. You gotta, you know, that's right. how those things begin. So
we gotta take a break. You want to do one more song?
Sure.
Is that okay? So we're gonna come back after this break with another song from Brad Peterson. I don't even know what you're gonna do. Will it be off the new record?
We'll see.
You do whatever you want. All right, so don't go away on Nocturnal Journal on WGN.
Well, you can write your name or you can sing your song. You can better build until your toil is long. Everything will fade, and everyone dies, and I'll see you on the other side. You may drive to Maine or own a splendid car. You might be well known in the place you are. Let it all go and just enjoy the ride. And I'll see you on the other side. Not have a home or a stitch of clothes. You may stand abandoned, left here on your own. We can't stay, no, we cannot hide. And I'll see you on the other side. Yes, I'll see you on the other side. Well, I'll see you on the other side.
Brad Peterson, you don't waste words. You really have a sense of economy in your writing. Really, I mean, that's, talk about that song. I mean, every word counts.
I'm always shooting for 2 minutes and 50 seconds. Yeah. I think it was Pete Thompson who said it was tradition.
That's Nocturnal Journal rules. No, really, I mean, that, talk about that song. I mean, every word, you hang on every word in that song.
Well, I'll tell you this. I was about on the previous record called the Ellipsis album. I was getting all set to send the master the next day. And I had 13 songs ready to go, sequenced, ready to go, and I was basically listening to it for the final time, and that song came to me, and within an hour, it was recorded. And I loved it so much that I kicked one of the songs off. So it was really, at the last minute, it hit me, and it was one of those, it happens so rarely where lightning strikes, where every word it was written instantly. So it was probably written in 5 minutes, recorded within an hour, and really set up two microphones, played it live. And I don't know. I think it's there's a common and a universal theme to it about we're all kind of equal in the end.
Sure. Yeah. It's a beautiful song.
Thanks.
Did you grow up around here?
I was born on the East Coast, and I ended up in the Midwest. And I forced myself to lose my Philadelphia accent the year I got made fun of when I moved here.
And how long ago? This leads to another question.
And I got to tell you something. WGN television helped me do it.
Oh, yeah.
Because I had come home from school and I'd parrot, basically. And next we have the weather. And next we have the weather.
And that's great. So when did you come here?
That was when I was a kid. You know, I was still single.
Well, the reason I asked
digits.
That, yeah, I mean, I don't know if you guys have seen it, 27 years of Uncommon Ground, but there, I grew up here, and there was a whole generation of people who were, like, into the whole John Prine, Steve Goodman. There were people, actually, the late Mike Jordan, who was a friend of mine, who came to Chicago from St. Louis because of the Prine and Goodman scene and stuff. Right. I mean, that type of songwriting. Were you hip to that at all, or had that already passed?
Yeah, I didn't really... As far as the folk guys, you know, I was on the outskirts of Dylan, and I really, I kind of was more of a Mark Knopfler guy. Yeah. You know, I felt like everybody else likes Bob Dylan, and that catalog's just way too big to just absorb, so I'm going to go this way. So I became more on the folk side, but really, I used to listen to the Beatles, and, you know, I
know you like the Monkees. I read your Monkey thing. You wanted
the Monkees. I saw them living in that beach house, and I was like, I want that.
Yeah, right. And
so, yeah. Yeah. I'm more in the tradition of a mid-century pop singer-songwriter.
Sure, yeah.
And, you know, I don't like playing by myself. This is really uncomfortable for me because in my head I'm hearing, you know, four-part harmonies, and I'm hearing this sort of dingy cobweb piano. And this whole new record is all about the dingy, lonely basement piano.
Oh, wow. Wow. And that's you can hear that 818 at Uncommon Ground.
Correct.
Correct. Got that right. Was that on your radar? A couple things on, and then we got to wrap it up. What 27 years ago was the whole singer-songwriter thing? How did that equate into what you wanted to do at Uncommon Ground when you opened? That's kind of the same question.
Well, we were trying to fill a hole, really. I think that we were trying to find, well, we knew when we opened that there was a hole for emerging singer-songwriters. And we forced
because there was a gap. I mean, Holstein's had probably closed.
Oh, yeah.
Holstein's and that whole Lincoln Avenue thing.
Yeah. There was an Amazing Grace way west that was smaller. You know, we knew there was a pretty big gap, and we wanted to be the place where my policy, and I booked all the music, was no covers. No, you have to play your own music. If you play a cover, I won't book you again. And people are like, what? I don't know if I have a 45-minute set or an hour set. I got to play some covers. I'm like, I'm not going to book you then. I want singer-songwriters.
Yeah, I just heard a thing on the radio. I mean, Bob Seger once told Glenn Frey or something, yeah, you'll never get a record deal unless you play original music. You know, yeah. I heard them, and they were all playing covers. You know.
Yeah.
On the time we have left, talk about the harvest. You got a harvest dinner coming up.
Yeah.
And then
I
want everybody to plug everything before we
so every summer, mid-August, and this year it's on August 22nd, we're going to be hosting a harvest farm dinner. And basically it's all about providing a way of getting a whole crowd of great community people together to come and eat. And the majority of what we're serving that night is things that we either grew on the farm or brewed in the brewery, or something, you know, and if we supplement, it's very local. So it's a celebration of having this farm and being able to share it with our guests.
And what date is that again?
It's on Wednesday, August 22nd.
Okay. All right.
The tickets will be going on sale on our website probably on Monday.
Okay, give me the addresses and the website again.
Uncommonground.com, and we have 1401 West Devon in Edgewater and 3800 North Clark in Lakeview.
Thanks, and congratulations on 10 years. I never got this question in, but have people come to you for advice who also want to do
a roof? Well, we do a lot of tours and talks and school groups, and people come from all over the world, and it's really kind of a crazy thing this thing has developed into.
We actually got to go around the world, too. We just got back from Paris, flew us out there to speak at their symposium, which
good
is a whole
you.
Other story.
Good for you. And Brad, how can people find out more about you, upcoming gigs? How can they order the new record?
Just Google me.
Well, don't be so shy. www.bradpeterson.com.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, they'll find me.
Yeah. And again, at Uncommon Ground, you'll be there. Will you be answering questions and talking about the CD?
I'm going to try to treat it like a book signing, except it's going to be a record.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Thanks, you guys. Thanks for listening. Thanks for coming in. Thanks for Aubrey Mumpower for the engineering, and thanks for Dan Long for the production. We'll be back next week on Nocturnal Journal. Don't go away.